Station number 15433.
Peter McAleese, side 6, Snow Goose.
Yeah, it was called, first freefall operation was called Operation Snow Goose. And it was, you know, we were breaking new ground. Mm-hmm. And they were dropping us on that Green Archer radar. So we took off from, and I can remember the chap's name, we were to lay an ambush for a chap called Mohammed Al-Maghribi Al-Houshibi. You know, he was one of the local bandits there, and he worked in the Al-Mila area, which was south of Harbour Lane. So what we did was we did a free fall operation. So we, at 1 o'clock in the morning on a full moon, we flew down to Harbour Lane, parachuted in, 10,000 feet, came down, and we did an operation there. Mm-hmm. And
would you class that as Halo or?
It was, well, Halo's with oxygen, but it was it was just a straight free fall. We did it and got ourselves into a track junction. It was the navigation was good, and we got ourselves in. Mm. We regrouped, did the ambush, and it was uneventful. You know, we waited for 3 nights because the information had it that it was going to pass through this area.
Did you have night vision equipment at that stage?
No, there was nothing. And you know, we didn't have illuminated altimeters. We had just a little ESCO light, you know, the parachute ESCO light. So just a little light that if you're in the water, you switch it on, and so people can see in the dark. So we had a little red light and one on the back of our helmets, so as the chaps could actually see us.
Right.
I mean, it was primitive. I mean, we walked onto the helicopters like penguins carrying our rucksacks on our back, sat in the rucksack, can you see that? Flew down and then climbed out onto the skids of the helicopter. And when the pilot said go, we jumped.
No. Right. Argyles at that time, did you have?
The Argyles were working in the crater, and they were down. They were mainly involved with the city itself. Mm. Up country with us, we had Marines. At one stage, we had some of the Parachute Regiment and the KSLI, the King Shropshire Light Infantry.
Right.
So, anyway, the next phase was let's go back to this dustbin carry-on again,
the dust truck.
We got off the truck and we moved in, and we put patrols, OPs all the way up this wadi. And what happened is the goat herders used to come along the sides of the wadis in the mountains with their goats, but in actual fact they were spying for the dissidents. So, you know, if they picked somebody up, start shouting to each other across the wadi, and it was beautiful how it was done. One of our guys was actually compromised, so what we did is we brought the helicopters in, and there was a further OP from 19 troop further down the wadi. So what we did is we pulled out, and when the goat herders came up, they saw there was nobody there, told the sort of dissidents that we'd gone out. So honestly, it was like a gentleman's war. We get back, we were tired. We get into the showers, washed, shaved, cleaned our weapons, and the next thing said, there's dissidents in the wadi. They'd actually passed this other OP, and the OP was trying to get permission to open fire on. They says, no, stay where we are, we'll bring in an assault force. So what we did is we flew in 4 scouts, 16 of us, and we get straight to grips with these guys, you know, and we had a shootout with them, I think. We killed
the scout is a
scout helicopter.
It's a bubble helicopter.
No, that was the Bell. The scout was the one with the door sliding back, carried 4 guys, 3 in the back, 1 in the front.
Okay, right.
As I say, this was breaking. We took the doors off the helicopters. The SAS are taking the doors off the helicopters, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So, as I say, we flew in, got to grips with the situation. We killed 3, wounded 5, and then the KSLI came in and slung an outer cordon.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a couple of contacts during the night. Sorry, killed 3 and wounded 2. And we had a guy wounded herself.
Mm.
And it was pretty good because, you know, it just showed us there was another way we could get to them. Can you see that with the dummy pullout? And the other thing is it was the beginning of the use of helicopters in the assault role. Can you see that? You know, the helicopter's been brought on a target by an OP. So there was that. And with a contact, as I say, it lasted from about 9 in the morning and sort of finished about 4 in the afternoon. You know, it was a real gentleman stuff, you know. And we came in with light order on. We didn't have rucksacks. We just straight out of, you know, we were in good nick. And that helped a lot in pursuing these people. In fact, I think the troop officer got an MC, or it contributed towards his MC, and a chap in the troop got an MM, a chap called Brian Dodds.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, they really got to grips with these guys and set upon them.
Right.
What
about, I mean, what was the incident at that time in the Radfan when two chaps were beheaded?
Right, that was 63.
Ah, aye.
Now, I did my Arabic course and we came back. Now, what happened is, now hold on, I hope I'm getting this right. A squadron went out to Radfan.
Mm.
And one of the troops of A squadron was going to mark a drop zone to bring the paras into a place called the Wadi Taim.
Okay.
And what happened is they were compromised by goat herders, again, and who started shouting to the rebels, and a contact started. So they brought an airstrike in, but there was more, you know, there was an awful lot of rebels. They were really in bandit country.
Mm.
So they fought through the day. They lost two guys during the day. And they sort of broke out at last light and made their way back, and the two bodies get picked up, and they cut their heads off and paraded them on stakes or something, you know.
Yeah. And then somebody had to go back and recover the bodies.
Somebody went back later and they picked up, you know, the remains, you know.
Yeah.
And that was the beginning of the Radfan operations. Mm. Three para then walked in with the Marines, and I think the KOSBs were involved, and they really pacified the Wadi Taim, you know. But after that, we did sort of minor operations in there, you know. Okay. You know the odd shots being fired here and shit. You know, they were awful good at long range shooting the Arabs, you know.
With accuracy, or
yeah. Well, what they do is they fire rounds beforehand, you know, from where they were, and they'd say, right, there's a stone there, and they get the range through that. Can you see it?
Mm-hmm.
So and
that was sort of presumably with a Mark IV
rifle.
Rifle.
I mean, there was one chap there called Tony Brown, and the guys got out the helicopter, and the helicopter put them down, pulled off, and they were sort of, you know, tidying up on the landing zone, grabbing the rucksacks and that. And this guy fired a bullet. It must have been 700-800 metres away.
Mm.
And it was just petering out, you know, it was losing its velocity, and you could hear that sort of purring sound, and it just took the throat at him. Killed him. Yeah. And as I say, the bulk of the fighting out there was actually heavy stuff was done by A squadron. D squadron done some real original stuff, you know. By the way, at the same time, what was going on, part of D squadron during that trip were working in the township. So what they did is we had Fijians in the regiment, and the guys used to blacken up, and they'd dress up as Arabs. Can you see that?
But they're very tall Fijians.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
Okay.
So they'd pass for Somalis, can you see that?
Right, yes.
And they'd come along the road, and what they'd do is you have two white men in front pretending to be drunk, with maybe the two Fijians following them. And what happened is, you know, a couple of Arab terrorists would say, right, we've got a couple of drunk Brits here, we'll try and do them, you know, and they'd try and give them a come on, can you see that? With the two Fijians doing this as cover. In actual fact, there was a wee bit of loss of control there, and that our regiment decided to do it without telling anybody. Ran into some of your guys and they get blown away. Aye.
Yeah.
And, you know, there was, and this is the only thing is when you get these undercover type things, you've got to have one big umbrella controlling it, or else, you know, it can go off at an angle, you know.
Mm. Okay, so how much longer were you out there then?
I went back out for one more trip.
What was the one with de la Billière and he, in his memoirs, he goes on about some ambush or something in Aden? No, maybe not.
I can't remember it.
Well.
The thing about de Billière was a very original thinker. De Billière was a guy that brought out the teams that they, what was the name? Nina. It was called Operation Nina.
Mm.
And he started the pseudo-ops in the town, you know. And the other thing about the pseudo-ops was the guys dressed up as Arabs.
All right, okay.
He started off there. And the other thing about de Villiers was the only squadron commander who took his whole squadron into the field in Borneo as well. Very, very original thinker, you know. And, you know, he took his complete squadron in and fought over the border with his squadron. Can you see that?
Right.
So, I mean, what he did is he if he wanted fire support, he had guns, everything support, and we actually went into Indonesia with the squadron.
Right.
Whereas we
so
tend
firing at company, operating at company strength, which
yeah,
is
yeah.
rare.
We tended to get in maybe 2-4-man patrols, ambush a river, and kill some guys on the river. I was never actually involved in that.
Uh-huh.
But there was some good, in the last trip in Borneo, there was some good ambushes done mm-hmm. with guys ambushing on the rivers.
This is the British Army, so yeah. now you've had operations in
yeah.
Cyprus, you've had operations
yeah.
twice in Aden,
yeah.
and also in Borneo.
Yeah.
In the American Army and other armies, you yeah. get loads of medals. How many medals were you entitled to at this point?
I got one. You know, the everlasting GSM, you right. know, you just keep putting bars on it all the time,
right.
you know.
You didn't even get a United Nations.
Oh, I got a United Nations one for Cyprus, huh?
Well, anyway.
Two, yeah.
Certainly,
yeah.
That's two.
Yeah.
What else happened in brief during that?
What happened? Yeah, the behaviour caught up with me again.
Oh, dear.
Yeah. I got back from Borneo had wrapped up, Aden had wrapped up, and this was 67. And, you know, again, it was back to exercises, courses and whatnot.
Back in England.
Yes. And I got into a fight in Hereford. And with one of the guys in another squadron.
Mm.
And I was sent back to the parachute regiment.
Again. Did you get your leave this time?
No, I never got any. Straight back this time. And, you know, this time was a reception party waiting for me. You know, the CEO of the regiment... that I came from to the regiment I went from both were ex-Argyles, you know. So I get back, there was this sort of reception committee waiting for me. And just prior to that, I did a parachute course in France as well, a free fall course in France.
Right. How do you find the French?
Very, very parachute orientated people, you know.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, the. They used to go a bundle in Le Para, but the Le Para of that time was not the Le Para that fought from 46 to 62. You know, with this time, they were going a wee bit to seed then, you know.
Okay.
You didn't have that combat experience that they had from, say, 46 to 62. I mean, they were at it the whole time.
Yes.
Anyway, I got back to the parachute regiment, and my marriage was under an awful lot of stress.
Uh-huh.
So I applied for a...
But you married the girl that you kept going in?
No, that finished, you know.
Right.
I met a girl in Hereford,
right.
and I'd get married, and that was in 66.
Mm.
And it was... I was too young to get married, and she was older than me as well. And I don't like to proportion blame or anything like that, you know what I mean? It takes two to split these things up. But I found it was pain, disputes and whatnot. And I asked to be posted to Brecon because she wouldn't come to Aldershot when she was in Hereford. You know, and I get subjected to, you know, it's a British Army. You know, what good can you do as at Brecon? I said, well, I don't know, so I'm asking, can I have a posting there? And, you know, he said, the 2IC it was the regiment. You wouldn't make a biscuit store storming in this unit, you know. And then
this was of the regiment?
The parachute regiment.
Yeah.
You wouldn't make a biscuit storming, you know. You know, you just take it, you know. And he says, you're no good to us. And I said, well, sir, you know, while I'm here,
right.
you know, you've just said to me that I'm no good to you. And, you know, because you've said I'm no good to you, I've got no faith in you either. So you've got no faith in me, I've got none in you. And if you put me in charge of a section like that, the only people that's going to suffer are the men. You know, so why don't I revert when don't you come that in my office? You know, it's a British Army, can you see that?
What was the solution?
The solution was I asked to go to Brecon, and he says, yes, I'll tell you what I'll do. I'll send you to Brecon, the senior NCO course, and if you pass it, I'll eat my hat, you know. So I managed to get there.
This is the senior NCO's infantry course.
Yes, yeah.
Yeah.
So I...
Okay, this Hereford, you just happened to whack... Well, this is a dispute, and you hit the bloke.
Yeah.
All right.
And the actual fact, the two of us, it wasn't a dispute. I mean, it was a fairly serious battle, you know. By the time the two of us had finished, we were both hospital cases, you know. And
what happened to him? Was he disciplined as well?
No. I was a corporal at the time.
Oh, I see. And he was what?
A troopie.
Oh, I see.
Yeah. And, you know, it was totally my fault. You know, I accused the man of staring at me and, you know, I...
Really?
Yeah. And I was 100% to blame for it. It was just that I was taking the frustrations of my marriage out on someone else.
Yeah. So you screamed, mate, did you? I mean,
pardon?
You're looking at me, are you? How's that with the conversation?
No, I went in the pub and he says, I see you're staring at me. He says, yes, I am. And, you know, it sort of went on from there, you know.
Yeah.
And as I say, I finished up back in the parachute regiment. And I eventually got to Brecon.
Yeah.
On a senior NCO's course.
Yeah.
So I went there and I got an A grading on it. So I came back to the battalion. And the adjutant got a hold of me. And the adjutant had been there when he said that. He said, now, don't you start when you get into this office, you know. You know, the adjutant was a decent chap. I'd known him as a junior officer.
Uh-huh.
And I said, he says, don't you start on about him eating his hat, you know. I says, no, sir. So I came back for that. I was promoted to...
Did you go into his office again?
Yes, I did. And it was the same man.
What was the conversation?
You know, I've obviously had it all wrong with you. You know. And again, it was confusing behaviour with soldiering. Can you see that? To me, the two things are separate. Although you can't have soldiers on about behaving badly. You know, if I was drinking and working at the same time, I could understand that it's affecting you. But, you know, like a fight in Aldershot or a fight in Hereford, it's a fight in Hereford.
Mm.
As I say, the army was going through this thing about aggression and violence at the time. And I know I stick by what they say. You know, I'm not making excuses for myself, but I've never fully understood it. Anyway, I went back and I was promoted to sergeant. And I went back and I took over a platoon in C Company.
This was in?
In One Para.
In Aldershot?
Yes.
Yeah.
And then the next thing was I was sent for at the battalion HQ.
Mm.
And it says, pack your kit, you've been posted back to Brecon as an instructor. This was about 6-8 weeks after it.
Really?
And I went to back to Brecon as an instructor at the senior NCO's tactics wing.
Really?
Mm. Yeah, and I went there and I spent about the last 9 months of my service at the tactics wing, which I enjoyed because the thing there was the calibre of man. You had good infantrymen there. Can you see that? You know, and I worked with two officers. One was called Harrington Spear, who was an Anglian, and the other one was Major Hopkins, a green jacket.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, these were professional men, mm-hmm. you know. And the other thing, it was getting me out of the parachute regiment. You know, it's a very insular setup. You know, the para SAS type thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I met some fine infantrymen there, and I learned an awful lot as well while I was at Brecon. You know, from other students saying, well, when we were in such and such a place, we didn't do it like that, we did it this way. Picked it up, can you see that? And what happened then was I decided to leave the British Army.
Could you have signed on again?
Yes, you know, one of the things here was my behaviour had been so bad that they says, right, I put in to sign on, and what they said was sign on for 3 years to make it 12, and they says, no, you can't sign, we'll allow you to sign on for 1 year.
Right.
I mean, and you know, it was a blow to my pride, it's either three or nothing. I mean, if you said that to me now, I'd say this is terrific, there's only a year's commitment. Mm. It was ideal.
Mm.
So I said, no, I'll go out. And I went out. And the minute I stepped through the doors of Brecon and became a civilian, I realised I'd made the biggest mistake in my life. And it was a bit of both, as my marriage went into an even worse state, went into a decline. I finished up, you know, getting locked up.
Mm.
And to-ing and fro-ing with jobs like oil rigs, bouncing, pipelines. And then I seen this advert in the paper that somebody wanted ex-soldiers to, you know, for interesting jobs abroad, you know, normal terminology, Daily Mirror. And I met a chap called John Banks, who'd been ex-2 Parachute Battalion, and got involved with him, and it never came to nothing. It was a, he was a bit of a Walter Mitty, and had, you know, that we were going to go and attack Rhodesia, you know, and this pure...
No, by this time, Rhodesia was UDI independent.
Yeah, UDI. And...
temporarily independent.
Yeah, so anyway, I... Banks then tried to start a local security company, and I worked with him for a few months, and I said, I can't take this guy. He's a wee bit of Walter Mitty. So I then came back.
But didn't he operate in Devon or something, apart from anything else?
No, Camberley.
Oh, did he?
Yeah, but they had a wee place down there. They were doing some training down there. I think you are right.
Uh-huh.
And...
But Banks was most notably concerned with the Angolan mercenaries later.
Yeah. Mm. So...
10 years later,
yeah.
Really.
As I say, I was to and fro from jobs, and then, you know, my civilian side of my life was terribly... It was uneventful. In fact, it was horrendous. You know, I was frustrated.
Where were you living?
I was living in Hereford.
You so know, you, what have you got, a little house or what?
No, my marriage broke up.
Yeah.
And I was to and fro and trying, you know, the normal, you go through trying to get back to my wife, splitting up. Got myself involved with another woman. That was horrendous as well, you know. And, you know, now I look at it in hindsight now, the magistrates, they did the right thing by sending me to jail.
Well, so, did you hit somebody again or...?
I assaulted my girlfriend's family. I assaulted the whole family. And, you know, I just couldn't handle it.
Whereabouts was that?
This was in Hereford.
No, she lived in Hereford as well.
And it got to a stage where it was a highly volatile family. And, you know, with me being volatile as well, I mean, it was just getting on all the time. You know, there was one week I'd, you know, do this to them, and next week I'd do that. And
So you came up before the Beak?
I came up before the Beak, and... they gave me a suspended sentence the first time. Mm. And then I assaulted all the family again. And the police, in actual fact, they were extremely fair. I mean, they said, you know, Your Honour, there's two sides to the story. Technically, this man is guilty of all these assaults. But what's not coming to the surface here is the fact that, you know, he's getting the gears off and they're winding them up. And then, you know, we get the end result. So I finished.
What sort of family? I mean, were they these?
It was one of these big, close families where everybody lived within 100 meters of each other. You know.
Yeah. What sort of line of business were they? Or farming or?
No, it was a load of girls. You know, there was, you know, it was you know, they're all married to guys with different professions. But
oh, I see.
It was the one father and mother had some like 6 daughters. You know.
All right.
And anyway, I got in involved with this one. It was, you know, a sort of highly passionate thing, you know, but, you know, I look back in it now and, you know...
So what age were you then?
I was about 29, 30, and it was frustrating. And I used to get inside I'd go to the prison, and, you know, there was some form of relief in it, can you see it?
Okay. Did the drink pay much in this? Were you,
it was always when I'd been drinking alcohol, you know. You know, I'd get wound up and then, you know... It was just, you know, instant maniac, add alcohol, can you see that? It was, so I finished up there. And
so you went to jail?
I went to jail, yeah.
Had you been in jail in the army?
No.
No.
Oh, no, yes, I did 14 days once.
But that was in the regimental jail?
Yeah, the regimental jail, yeah.
Not
no, I never made the grade. I never made the big one.
So what? How did you find the neck?
It was frustrating, and I.
Where was this?
I went to Gloucester Neck, and what I couldn't understand was the subculture. You know, everything was inverted. You know, the guy who had failed the most had the most standing, and the guy who was doing 15 years had more standing than the guy who was doing a year, but he was 15 times more a failure. Right. Can you see what I'm getting at?
And how did you mix in with the other prisoners?
I used to batter them all.
You know. You used to batter them all?
Yeah, and, you know, like, because I couldn't, you know, the...
For
the,
what or how?
I get put in charge of the sort of bag shop.
Yeah.
And, you know, There was
how long were you?
I was doing 9 months. Aye.
That's first offence.
No, no. They'd implemented the suspended sentences.
Oh, right. Okay.
So and these hard cases used to take the bags off the new guys, and they wouldn't have any tobacco.
Right.
Because they were on what you call training.
Yeah.
So they'd get what they call top whack. You know, it's prison terminology. So I said, all the bags come in, this guy went, put me down for top whack. I says, no, I says, I'm not doing that this week. What I'm going to do is I'm going to split the bags evenly among everybody, so as everybody gets a share. I says, I think it's wrong that two men shouldn't monopolise the whole shop.
And then?
He said to me, I've got ways of fixing people like you. And you know, and it's all, I'll give somebody an ounce and they'll do this to you, an ounce of tobacco, you know. So I said, I've got ways of doing, fixing people like you. So I just pulled him in the back, I whacked him. And he ran out in front of the prison officer. I mean, these guys have spent all their life in prison. He went, come on, hard case, come on. And the prison officer...
So you hit him once, and then he ran off.
But he ran out and stood in front of the prison officer, because he knows you won't do anything, and he's not going to lose face. You're the guy that lost face. And it was really funny, because he did this in front of the prison officer, and the prison officer got up and walked into the toilet. So I pulled him back into the bike shop again, and I laid into him. And, you know, after that, and the whole thing is funny, Bruce, and you might think I'm glamorising it. You've got it's inverted, you know, everything is a subculture. And you know what you cannot do is you can't get in there and be Mr. Nice Guy, because they're going to trample all over you. And you know, and the great thing about it was, is I tended to get left alone after that, because you know, when I first went in, I was fairly quiet, you know.
Within how many days of being in the nick did that happen?
Well, this was in about, just after about a month, you know.
Right. How did you find it, just going in there to being inducted into the...
I was extremely hurt about it. I was hurt. But deep down, I could understand that, you know, it gave me breathing space.
Yeah.
You know, and, you know, I cannot say that I've ever had a chip on my shoulder about it.
Mm.
I mean, it gave me time to think, and who knows if I'd have carried on, what I could have done.
Mm.
So, you know...
Or might unfortunately have done
it.
Wound up doing worse, yeah.
So what it did to me is it got me to terms of things. And the other thing is, you know, I joined a drama group.
Really? In the prison?
You know, it was good fun. We had big chess tournaments going, and every day there was a PTI would just come in and say, you... the gym, and they take me down there, and I'd rattle out this circuit, say right back, you know. And they were good to me.
How did you get on with the screws? I mean,
they were terrific to me. I never ever crawled to them. You know, you get this prison terminology where they call them boss. I'd say, Mr. So and so, could I do the following? And I have nothing but respect for the guys there.
Mm-hmm.
There was probably one or two who were officious little shits, you know, that you probably get in any system. But
How did that square with the other prisoners if you were on reasonable terms with the screws?
No, there was never any. I'd never walk up. It's just that I was very much a loner, and there was never any like. They just come and say, you so-and-so. And they know that you can't be afford to be seen crawling to them. Can you see that? And some of them had marvellous ways with them. You know, like one guy would come in there. He was a Marine. And I'd be working in the kitchen with this guy.
Mm-hmm.
And he was an ex-Marine. And we'd be scrubbing up the kitchen. The other guy smoked, you know, and he'd come in, light a cigarette, take a puff out and put it in the ashtray. Can you see that?
Mm-hmm.
Those guys there, they've got an awful difficult job.
Mm.
And, as I say, it wasn't my place to make it any more difficult for me. And then I was in the same cell as a guy who worked in the laundry section.
How was it? It's just...